The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we have a fun show for you here. In fact, this is a repeat guest that we've had, and I'm going to just give you just a little bit of background first before we jump into the show here. But those of you that are listening, I know, there's many of you looking for ways to generate cash flow in retirement, and you're looking for a good return on your investment. Now, we've talked a lot about buying multifamily investments, apartments that can generate, let's say, $10,000 a month in cash flow. If you have, for example, a $100 per unit cash flow, okay, how many units do you need to generate that $10,000? Well, you'd need an apartment with at least 100 units. So, and I talk about which is better, buying 100 unit apartment or buying 100 houses and the economies of scale. Well, this guest basically puts that whole analogy to shame, okay? Because he talks about how you can buy one single family home and generate a net profit of $10,000 per month, okay? And I'm sure there's many of you that want to hear that. Now, the person I'm talking about is Gene Guarino. And Gene was a guest back on the Old Dogs REI Network on October 17th of 2016 in a show 041, called Investing in Assisted Living Facilities. Now, Gene is a CFP, which means Certified Financial Planner in the U.S. and also licensed in Australia. He is the president of the Residential Assisted Living Academy. He owns and operates residential assisted living homes, which we'll define as we go on with this, in Phoenix and Scottsdale, Arizona. Gene has been a real estate investor for over 30 years. He has owned and operated 16 businesses and has been an angel investor in numerous others. Gene has written 4 books and hosted 3 radio stations and spoken to over 300,000 people in 4 countries over the past 20 years on topics ranging from business and investing and so forth. Now, today, Gene's focus is primarily on residential assisted living. With over 77 million baby boomers coming of age, the need is greater than ever and getting bigger every day. Gene's goal is to help those people and to train others to help them as well, to do good and to do well. Well, Gene, welcome back to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thanks, Bill. That's a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. And I am so stoked. From that very first show that you came on, I was just totally blown away by this. We see, you know, in the multifamily world and so forth, just the impact and the changes and shifts that are occurring there in terms of tenants and homes sales and so forth as it relates to the baby boomers. And this is where seems like you're just primarily focused, you and I both being baby boomers, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we both have had families, family members, both my mom and my dad, that were in residential assisted living facilities. Let's give some background for those that didn't hear that first show. Just give us a little background on how you got into this area.
Sure. Well, I first heard about this from a business standpoint about 15 years ago. There was somebody who was in the front of the room talking about all kinds of great things you can do in real estate. And one of them that he was very excited about was assisted living. And I remember distinctly Bill running up to the front saying, "Tell me more." He said, "Well, I can't. I don't actually do it. I'm just telling you, you should do it." So that was a long time ago. I was disappointed, and I went out looking for people that were doing this residential assisted living. And the few people that I found weren't willing to teach me or show me how. They were kind of keeping it this secret for themselves. So my interest kind of went down. Then 5-6 years ago, my mother started to need help. And when it's mom, then it becomes real. So at that point, it all came right back up, the concept of what do you do when your parent or a grandparent needs that kind of help? And you realize it's expensive. It's not easy to find a great place, and the great places have waiting lists. You can't even get in. So at that moment, I literally vowed to create a solution for my mom, knowing that if I could create something I'd be proud to have my own mother in, others would want to move in too. And they did.
God, that's neat. Again, I think because there wasn't a body of knowledge about this. I mean, sure, there were people doing it, but really there wasn't anything that was available that could teach you how to do it. You had to kind of figure everything out yourself, right?
Yeah. And I knew as a business person, an entrepreneur, that with every crisis, there's an opportunity. And I knew that there was a solution. And when I didn't find somebody else that was willing to show me or teach me, I said, okay. One of the best ways I can do this is to buy an existing business, learn from that, everything good and bad about it, and then decide what to do differently and change. And that's exactly what I did. So I bought an existing one, a home with this business running and operating inside it, found out all the things were wrong with it, paid my lessons, the school hard knocks is expensive tuition, and fixed what was wrong. And then I said, okay, now I'm ready to create one. So then I went on my second one, which was to go buy the real estate, do the renovations, get it licensed up and running, and so on. Then went on to the third. And now I've taught thousands of people across the country how to do the same exact thing.
That's fascinating. Your mother was in one of those facilities. Was she in the first one that you purchased?
Well, with my mom, she was in upstate New York. I'm out in Arizona, so thousands of miles away. And we couldn't find what we were looking for in New York, in upstate, and so we ended up getting in-home caregivers, which is very expensive, about $23 an hour is the national average, to take care of mom, and she ended up passing away there in the home, and she never got to move into my home, but I've had lots of people's mothers in and out of our homes, and dads, too.
And why don't you just maybe differentiate? There's a lot of, I guess, assisted living type or just types of facilities for those that are elderly. Can you kind of break them out? I mean, most people are probably kind of familiar with convalescent homes or some of the other ones out there. Can you just kind of give us where this fits and differentiates itself?
You know, it's really interesting because I'm 57, so at my age, my first recollection of old folks' homes, as I would call it, was when I was 15 years old doing a service project for high school or church and raking the leaves outside of a big old house where these grandmothers were in the windows. And to me, it felt like this big haunted house and what's going on? But I look back on it years later, that was an assisted living home. Now, back then, they might have called it a convalescent home or a nursing home even, but that's not quite what we do. So if you think about it from a perspective, you've got the Golden Girls. Four mature women living together in a home, no caregivers, they just take care of each other. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got a big old institution. It looks and smells like neglect as soon as you walk through the front door. So neither of those, it's right in between. It's a single family home where there are a group of seniors there, but there are caregivers taking care of them 24/7. Not nurses and doctors, but caregivers trained properly for exactly what they do. And those people living in that residential home, they may be spending $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 per month or more. Now, the alternative to that, when somebody's not ready for the nursing home but can't live on their own like Golden Girls, would be to go into a big box facility, as I would call it. So Brookdale, Sunrise, Atria, those are large publicly traded corporations that have homes that are constructed for hundreds and hundreds of people. Collectively, they're servicing thousands and tens of thousands of seniors. But it's more like a hotel. It's not a home. It's home-like. And the caregivers are there doing a shift and moving in and out. Whereas in our home, it's an actual home in a neighborhood where there may be two caregivers taking care of 10 people instead of 10 caregivers taking care of 200 people in the big box facility.
Gotcha. What would you say is sort of the primary resident for residential assisted living?
Well, let's look at the overall spectrum. As you know, kids, I have a six-year-old grandson. He's in the other room right now hanging out with my wife, and he can't do anything on his own besides roll over, right? So when you're little kids, you're totally dependent on everybody. 10, 12 years old, you're totally independent. You can do it all. By the time you're 16, you think everybody else is silly for even existing because you know it all. Then you turn 30, 40 and realize, wow, my parents really were smarter than I thought, knew more than I thought. And then by the time you get to be 70, 80, 90, now you're still living in the house. The kids have moved away. The house is big and you're taking one bedroom, the kitchen, and a seat in the family room. But you're no longer able to get around as easily. The kids stop by when they can, but not that often. And you're not ready for a hospital. You don't need that. But you do need some help, medication management, food preparation, housekeeping. And that's where you're a prime candidate, if you will, for assisted living. But keep in mind, nobody moves into assisted living unless they need to. It's not there because they've got a great shuffleboard court. You know, that's independent living. You're on your own taking care of yourself. Assisted living, typically people move in because there's an event. And that event may be they fell and they went to the doctor, the hospital, took an x-ray, hip's not broken. But now the caseworker at the hospital says to the family, what are you going to do? Mom needs help and you're not able to take care of her, so what are you going to do? And then it really becomes real. You start to think through just what I said. Well, do we hire somebody to come in? Does somebody quit their job and stop taking care of their own kids to take care of mom? Or do we bring mom or dad to a facility, to a home? So it's somebody who needs help with their activities of daily living, and that's everything you did this morning after you hit the snooze alarm, getting up, dressed, feeding, bathing, all of that. And as you get older, some people need help with a lot of that, some very little. Most people don't end up dying in a hospital, though. That's kind of that TV picture that we have where people need medical help and they go to a hospital and pass away. No, most people simply go to sleep one night and wake up in heaven the next morning. It's pretty much that. So in an assisted living home, it's, again, not medical, not a nursing home, but it's not Golden Girls either. They're being taken care of.
Right. So they may need help bathing, even maybe going to the bathroom and so forth, managing their medications. But for the most part, you know, they're pretty functional.
Some of them need a lot of help. Let me make sure I make this distinction, Bill, because a lot of your listeners here are very real estate oriented, as you mentioned, apartments, and also just income and investment. So there's really two parts to this. One is the real estate, and the other one is the business of the residential assisted living. And you can do either or both.
And that's what's really interesting. One, for you know, you had a career as a certified financial planner, so you're used to dealing with all kinds of investments, I'm sure. What drew you to it from an investor standpoint?
You know, everything is cyclical, and there's small cycles, medium cycles, and then big cycles. So small cycles, the sun comes up, the sun goes down, you can kind of count on that. Bigger cycles, real estate tends to run in 7 to 10 year cycles from the bottom to the top and then back down. We're closer to the top than the bottom, as far as I can see in real estate right now. Not know if we're in the seventh inning or extra innings, but it can get called on rain any moment now. There's your baseball analogy for the day. Now, when it comes to the big, big picture, seniors, baby boomers, since 1946, when the baby boomers came on the scene, they have been literally driving the world's economy and changing it as they go through like a pig through a python on every chart you can see. To the point where, you know, suburbs, that's because of the baby boomers. Franchises, McDonald's and the rest, baby boomers. healthcare, baby boomers, and now assisted living, baby boomers. So in the bigger cycle, when I started to look at this and said, okay, if I want to do just one thing and set myself up forever, right? Not for the next year or two or 10, but forever. What's the big cycle? And that big cycle is baby boomers are aging. They need help, a place to live. And it's a silver tsunami, as I say, that is coming our way that you just cannot deny. So this business of assisted living is really good now, and it's just getting better and better and better.
And that's, you know, that's, I'm sure, one of the factors that people are, as are listening to you, at least, you know, myself, you know, wondering, okay, so, I mean, it does sound like, gee, there's this huge market for this. But, you know, it sounds like it'd be really complicated to get involved with. I mean, there's got to be factors. You're dealing with somebody's health. I mean, there's got to be liability issues. You know, give me an idea. You sort of address those areas.
Yeah, and I want to make sure everybody understands this is not for somebody who is just out to make a quick dollar. And it's not for somebody who's going to give up easily. And I say it that way, Bill, because in order to do what I do, residential assisted living, there are going to be speed bumps and challenges and things you have to overcome. When you're making $10,000 or $15,000 net each month from a single family home, there has to be some work, or else everybody would be doing it. Now, when I say work, it's some effort and work to get it up and running. But once it is running, what I'm looking at is 5 to 10 hours a week to operate 2, 3, 4 of these homes. So you're managing the manager. The real estate is one part. And if you do it right, it can be very hands-off and a very rewarding as well as financially, but also people thanking you for what you're providing and doing for them.
I always think of the homes that my folks were in, and they were wonderful. You know, they're in a community, a little neighborhood. It was a home, like a house like they're used to living in. It wasn't some sort of a hospital type or you know, institutional looking place. It's just a home. You know, it's got flowers and gardens and neat things, and they're in an environment that's familiar. And that part of it, you know, I like. But obviously, you've got to have people there caring for them that know what they're doing because, you know, I mean, there are always issues. And, you know, my wife right now, for example, is taking care of her folks. You know, there are days when, boom, you know, the blood pressure is just, boom, just really down there. And you've got to do something. You got to know how to respond or they fall. And if they hit their head, you know, that's pretty serious if they're elderly because, you know, again, the brain size is different and aneurysms are more likely. So, what about that key component, the staffing of this?
Got it. Well, you know, you mentioned a lot of things that are kind of medical related and your wife, in this case, in a home, she's not trained for that. She's not geared towards that. She's not capable, frankly, of taking care of those things. So if there's truly a medical issue, whether it be at home or in one of our residential assisted living homes, you're going to call the doctor. You're going to call 911. Make sure we all understand what I do is not medical. There's no nurses and doctors and gurneys. It's a group home for the elderly. Now, the caregivers are properly trained, and each state has their own what it is to be properly trained. Arizona, we happen to have a very stringent training. It's 104 hours, background test, TB test, all kinds of fingerprint cards and so on. But somebody who's taking care of mom at home is not necessarily trained for that. They're the daughter. They're the granddaughter. They're the grandson. And really what we do is we provide the opportunity for somebody to bring mom and dad to us. They'll live in the house. They'll be well taken care of by professionals who are trained properly. 24/7 care. They're being taken care of day and night. And they come and visit. And they come and visit and see mom and spend a few hours and go back home. So they can be the kids again, the grandkids again, not a caregiver.
Gotcha. Let's maybe just zero in a little bit more on the business side of this, you know, how the numbers work here. There's obviously got to be some expenses that are going to be associated with running a home. Can you give us kind of an overview? I know it's difficult depending on the size of that particular home, but kind of an idea of, you know, our expenses, would you say 50% of your income? Are they, you know, considerably less? You know, where most of the expense area fall?
When you look at a residential assisted living home, there's three different categories, if you will. One is just the infrastructure, the house, the utilities, the taxes, those things. Another one is going to be the care of the resident. So the caregivers, the manager, the people who take care of the resident. And also, let's add in other things too. On a third category, think of the all-inclusive, like a Club Med, food, newspapers, entertainment, all of those things. So when somebody moves into the home, everything is being taken care of. They don't pay anything additional. So let's say they're paying, and I'm going to use round numbers to make it easy, $4,000 per person per month living in that home. Now, keep in mind, the national average right now is $3,750 for a private room in assisted living, and that goes everywhere from Medicaid and Medicare on the bottom to the highest, most expensive private pay on the top. We don't focus on Medicare or Medicaid. We just do private pay. We can talk about that. But the $4,000 a month, if you had 10 residents in the home, those 10 residents, by the way, they may have a private bedroom or they may be in a shared semi-private room. They're paying their $4,000 a month, and that is all-inclusive. So if the potential gross income for the home is $40,000 a month, 10 bedrooms, $4,000 each, the expenses on that are probably going to be about 70% of those expenses. So 70% of that income, rather. So $40,000, 70% in expenses. If you're netting 30%, that'd be about $12,000, $12,000 net profit from that business that's being operated. That's after all expenses, caregivers, mortgage, utilities, insurance, food, everything.
Do you have a good grasp on what you would say sort of the national average in terms of vacancy?
The vacancy right now in overall nationwide, and really the only numbers that exist are on the big box facilities, they'll fluctuate around 90%. Of occupancy. So vacancies, 10%. It could go 92% and go down to 87%. Through the Great Recession, it dipped down to 87%. Normally, it's in that 90 to 92% range. But there's plenty of people that are aging and need this kind of help.
Yeah, I would think the demand would be strong. But again, I would imagine that marketing and, you know, getting the word out about your facility is key, because there is going to be turnover, and you're going to want to keep as full as you can. Is that part of what you do as well with some of your clients? Is teach them how to market their facility as well?
Yeah, with our training, we teach people everything from the beginning to end, meaning where to do it, and that's the most important thing, Bill. Location, location, location. Where to do it, how to do it, how to hire the right people to make it easy for you, how to raise the capital or get bank loans or whatever to finance the entire project, to the operations, how to do it in such a way where you're hands off and not hands on. In addition to that, we do have a lot of people that come to us that just want to invest in these types of projects. So we've actually created a company to give them the vehicle to invest in. You can invest in a REIT, a real estate investment trust, on senior housing or the elderly and their care as well.
And what kind of yield are folks getting in that?
You know, in the old days, meaning, and that's, here's where we are in society, the old days, 5 or 10 years ago, right? You know, 10 years ago, when you talk about assisted living on the big scale, the REITs, the publicly traded companies, they were getting 12, 14, 15% returns in the REITs. But just like all big money, it's not necessarily smart money. They've been overpaying, they've been overbuilding, they've been doing things in such a way that it's just deploying the capital. So their cap rates have been crushed. They're back down to, let's say, the 8% range. So it's better than many of the funds that are out there, but not hugely different like it used to be. Now, on our side, I mean, if I can operate a business that has a 30% EBITDA, 30%, if you were to say a cap rate, it's not just the real estate, it's the business itself where we're making, you know, a 30% return on our capitalization. That's a huge return, but there's a lot of moving parts with that. So an investor in this today on a REIT might be getting 6 to 10, and somebody who's investing, let's say, with our projects and what we do, it can certainly be higher on the debt side if they're just lending money. And again, it depends on if I'm borrowing or lending, right? But I'm going to tell you, if they're just lending money, just the debt itself, maybe 4 to 10%, big range, and there's a reason why. And then if they're going to participate in the profits, it might be 6% on a pref and then getting a percentage of the profit and or equity. So equity in. So there's different ways to participate in a project.
Yeah, and in your previous interview that we had, and again, I'll make there'll be a link to that in the show notes for those listening, and I'd really recommend listening. You talk about various options. I mean, you can buy the house like you did. First you bought the business, so you mm-hmm. could just buy a business, but you could also buy a house and the business, or buy a house and convert it, or you could just own the real estate and rent it out to somebody that may be in the business. Or I guess you could. The fourth option, probably you could just invest in the REIT or somebody's business just outright. Mm-hmm. There's people listening that are kind of going, well, this makes sense. It sounds like there's a demand, sounds like a great thing. But, you know, but what does it really take to get into this to, you know, get that kind of a yield that you're talking about, like a $10,000 a month yield?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that people who are listening are kind of in one of a couple of categories. One might be just, I want a passive investment. I just want to be the lender, and I'm just holding a note, receiving a guaranteed income. That's kind of the least, the lowest amount of involvement. You're also going to receive the lowest return. If somebody's saying, hey, I'm willing to provide the capital, and somebody else is the operator and does all the work, quote unquote, I just want to get a decent rate of return on my money, but also a share of this profit, that can be huge. They can get, you know, 10 to 15% when you add it all together. If they're saying, hey, I want to do what Gene does, I want to own the real estate, and I want to operate this business, not hands-on, hands-off, but still be in control, what does it take to do that? Well, number one, if you're going to do this, get trained. Know what you're doing beforehand. I've had way too many people, Bill, you know, anybody who's listening, if you look up my name, you'll see all kinds of YouTube videos and all kinds of things. And I've people had them call me and say, Gene, I saw your YouTube video, went out and bought a house, and now I have a question. How do I get a resident?
Okay. Yeah, right.
I have a class for that, you know, and you should learn those things in advance, because people just assume that if it sounds easy, oh, I could just run out and do it. And some will, but most won't. They'll hit a wall, they'll give up, they'll fade on the vine, or they'll just not figure it out in time before their money runs out. So learn what to do in advance. Some of the people who come through our training, Bill, actually at the end of it decide, you know what, I thought I wanted to own and operate, but really I just want to be involved, write a check, and let somebody else operate. So I met somebody in the class, I'm going to be an investor with them. Sometimes they come out and say, I thought I wanted to be the owner of the business, but really I just want to own the real estate and I'll lease it to the owner of the business. And they partner with somebody there. And then somebody else like me may come through and say, I want it all. I want the real estate and great location, great appreciation. And I also want this business that makes me the 10 grand a month. But in order to do that properly, there's so many different things I could share. But one person is to have the right team around you. Like when you called and you had a conversation with my contact at the company here, Isabel, and it's having the right people on the team. So my manager at these homes, her name is Mariella. Mariella is my buffer. She's the manager. She's the one who handles the caregivers, the residents' families. I just manage the manager. I provide what she needs to be successful so that I can have my time to do other things.
That's great. Well, on the staff part of it, and I kind of see from your standpoint where you manage that, to me, it sounds like so much of this is also contingent on the state that it's being, you know, operated in. Is that correct?
Certainly the states have rules and regulations, some more than others, but certainly you do need to know exactly what to do in the state you're in.
Yeah. Like one of the questions I had is, what is sort of the staffing per number of people or residents? Is that dictated by the state at any point, or is that just a management issue?
It's a management issue, because the state, the statutes throughout the country pretty much universally state you, the business owner, determine how many caregivers you need to take care of your residents. So I gave you a rule of thumb, or maybe I didn't, but I will, 5 or 6 residents for one caregiver. So if I have 10 residents, I'll have 2 caregivers on duty during the day and 1 at night. People are asleep. They don't need as much help during that time. In a big box facility, they could have 200 residents and say, well, we're going to have 10 caregivers during the day. So the ratio is 20 to 1 or 10 to 1 versus ours would be 5 to 1. So that's, you determine though, as long as you, the business owner, say, I've got enough staff for my people, we're good.
And you mentioned the qualifications of some of those key staff, the caregivers. How do you know you're going to, you're going to get somebody? I know in Arizona they have training that's required, but what about in the states where they don't necessarily have that? How do you find that qualified person to work in your facility?
You know, it's interesting because it should be very clear state to state what somebody needs, but it's really not. So Arizona, 104 hours of training. Texas, until just about 6 or 8 months ago, was fog a mirror and you're a caregiver. So now they require, I think it's 4 hours within 30 days. That's not enough. So ultimately, regardless of what the state requires, you got to follow that as a minimum. When somebody comes to work for you, you're looking for the right people. You're looking for the person who loves the seniors, wants to take care of them. And we're going to make sure they're trained properly the way we think they should be treating these residents and so on. And usually that goes well above and beyond whatever the state does require.
Okay, that's great. That's great. And what kind of shifts are they working for the most part? I mean, is it 8 hour, 12 hour? How do you break that up?
Our caregivers pretty much do 12 hour shifts. So it's 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. And they'll work anywhere from one shift to five shifts, depending on. So if it's more than 40 hours, you have overtime. And I just calculate that into the overall cost of labor. But some people are there for the night shift, some for the weekend, some during the week, during the day. And they come in all shapes and sizes, Bill, from all over the world. It's kind of like the United Nations at the home many times.
I bet. And do they, I mean, and I know I'm kind of asking a question I think has already been answered, but these caregivers don't have to have any kind of nursing degrees or any special, besides the training that may be required by the state, they don't necessarily have to have any kind of special degrees or certificates or anything, right?
Well, no degree, not a medical professional, but some states do require what's called a CNA, Certified Nursing Assistant. That's 80 hours of classroom and 100 hours in the field. In Arizona, a CNA wouldn't qualify. They would need an additional 20-hour bridge course to give them the proper additional training to be a certified caregiver in the state of Arizona. So some states require a few hours, some require 30 hours, some require 100 hours. And then really the question that a lot of times people ask, Bill, is the idea of how do I find good people? With unemployment being at a record low, which most people say, hurrah, and most entrepreneurs are like, that makes life harder, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
We look at it and we want the right people. So they have to have the right attitude. They're there for the right reason. It's not a mercenary who's making an extra 50 cents an hour. It's somebody who wants to work with seniors. And if they're good, I'll pay them. And the longer they're with me, the more they get paid and give them raises. And it's a wonderful situation for them and for the residents.
Now, does your organization have any kind of a sort of a placement role or, matchmaker type role to take some of these good qualified people and find them places to work?
Not so much. I wish we did. And I wish there were a national resource for that. But since we're a national company working with people all over the country, caregivers are very local. If somebody's in Mesa, Arizona, they're not going to move even to, Peoria, an hour away. They're going to say, I need something right nearby me. So within the homes in your area, you'll know who the good caregivers are and the bad ones. We all keep the good ones and the bad ones keep rotating around. And that's part of it, is knowing who's good, who's bad, how to communicate that to each other so that we know which ones to hire and which ones not to hire.
Oh, that's great. I'm sure there's folks that are listening too that are wondering, okay, so what's required to get started in this cash-wise? What kind of an investment are we talking about?
And by the way, for those of you listening, Bill and I talked earlier, we're going to give you a free training, which will answer a lot of your questions. It'll be in the show notes for you, so stay tuned for that. But the cash requirement, it's a big depends. And what I mean by that is if the home is already senior-friendly and it's already appropriate for having the elderly in the home, it may not need any physical reconstruction or movement of walls or anything at all. On the other hand, it may be a house where you say, it's a 1,800-square-foot house in the right location, but if I convert that two-car garage that adds 400 more square feet. I could put in three bedrooms there, and I can make an extra $15,000 a month. So now we spend money on converting a garage or an addition or adding bathrooms. So it depends on the real estate side of it, what kind of work and cost and expense that would be. That also plays into how long it takes from the time you locate the property to when you're up and running. From there, the part that most business people, and I've consulted with enough business owners that the big mistake that a lot of them make is undercapitalization. They don't understand that when you start anything, it's going to cost more and take longer than you think. And as long as you're prepared for that, you're fine. So in this case, you need to know what is going to be the negative cash flow for the first 2 months, 6 months, whatever it may be to get to break even, and be prepared for that. So that could be $5,000, it could be $50,000, depending on your business and the length of time. So you've got those two numbers, the acquisition, the renovation, the real estate side. Then on the business side, you have the carrying cost to get to where you need to be. So as I said, the short answer is it depends, but it's all calculatable right from the beginning.
Okay. And so the average you were giving $3,750, I think it was, for on a national average, is that for a private room, or is that mixing in everything, shared rooms as well as private rooms?
That is for a private room. And by the way, that figure comes from Genworth.com. That's a private insurance company, Genworth, Genworth.com/cost of care. And I like to give that site to people, /cost of care, because when they go there, they can see the state, the location, and get a feel for it. And it blows most people away. They had no idea that's what it costs. But there's a lot of people listening right now. The show is all about 50 plus. And if you're 50, 60, your parents are 80, 90. And if you've had any experience in assisted living, you know it ain't cheap. And the big question people have is, how do people pay for this? Where do they come up with the money? Most people, less than 10%, do not have long-term care insurance. If they do, they're set. They're good. Most people don't, though. So what they end up doing is not going to the state and saying, I'm poor, have no money, no income, so now pay for me. The state will do that, by the way, to the tune of maybe $2,000 a month, including your Social Security. So the state might be writing a check for $800. $1,200 is your Social Security. But now you got $2,000 a month to pay for your assisted living. If the average home is $3,750 a month, you can imagine how below average, how unnice that home is going to be. I don't want to live there, and I'm certainly not going to put mom there. So what we're looking at is that in between, that 80% in between, that is going to pay for mom and dad's care. And a lot of that's going to come from usually somebody who's 80 or 90, work for a company, they've got a pension, they've got Social Security, they have a home that they own free and clear, and all of that goes towards paying for their long-term care. And if and when that runs out, then the kids who are 50 and 60 start taking money out of their pocket, their retirement, maybe even their own kids' college education funds to pay for mom and dad's care. And there's a solution to all that, by the way. I don't want anybody to think, oh my goodness, that's horrible. No, there's a solution. Open up one of these homes. Just open one home in your area. Make the $10,000 net per month, and then when it's time to move in, you or a family member, move right into the master bedroom and live for free.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I mean, that's an added benefit, I think, which is really neat, because I think most of us don't want to have that burden fall on their children and grandchildren or whoever. You know, that one, you've got a place that you know it's well designed to work because you designed it, right? And you've hired good people. And when it does become that time for you to go in, you feel comfortable going into that kind of an environment, it does make a difference too. So that's a great added benefit, I would say, to doing this. That's great. Wow. Well, our time's kind of run longer than I had initially thought we would. But, I didn't do a lot of the standard questions. So if they want to find out, about your biggest mistake and biggest success and all your favorite books and all that kind of stuff, they can listen to the first, your first interview.
Yeah.
We are going to have you howl, though. I mean, we got to do that. Otherwise, no, I just wanted to really zero in on this, try to get as many of those things addressed. I love the fact that you have provided a free training for the listeners of the Old Dogs REI Network, which is great. And there will be that link in our show notes as well. And we can also have contact information for you and your organization as well, listed there as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was just thinking about it as we were talking. At the very beginning, you mentioned the idea of apartments. And I know so many people are into apartments right now because it's awesome. It's really great. But then I was just thinking, if somebody is now 85 years old, they're now moving into assisted living, and all of a sudden they have to liquidate the apartment to pay for their care, it may be the wrong time in the cycle. And where they had $3 million in equity, now it's, well, we got no equity, or you got $500,000. And they wish they didn't have to sell it, but they do. If you just had this one care home, I can't imagine many people saying, you know what, my apartments are so nice, I'm going to move right into one of them when I'm retired, or when it's time for my assisted living needs to be taken care of. But these homes that we create, I mean, anybody who walks in, the first thing they say is, wow, it feels like home. I could live here.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too, because it's almost – kind of like the Airbnb phenomenon, you know, because these residential assisted living homes are just popping into neighborhoods. Most people don't even know that there are homes in their area, for example, because they're really becoming the preferred, preferred choice for a lot of families, because one, they can be fairly close to where mom and dad are living. And, it's also in a nice home, in a nice environment, so they can pick them up, take them to lunch, take them back, or sit out in the garden and talk or whatever. It's just a comfortable place. It doesn't have the awkwardness of a convalescent home or maybe a little more institutionalized type facility.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. Home is home.
Well, great. Well, Gene, I thank you so much for coming on. We will add all your contact information in here as well as that link to the free training. I know you have these 3-day training seminars, three-day training program is enough to get the people going, right? And they walk away with that, with a whole bunch of booklets and notebooks and supplies that show them how to operate and run and successfully market their facility.
Yeah, we do a home study course. They can do it that way, or we do a live 3-day training, which is definitely the way to go. And by the time they're done with either of them, they know what this is and how to do it. It's up to them to take action.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, Gene, thank you so much. This is great. I thank you for the update, too. It's interesting to see some of the statistics that have changed since the last interview. I remember that average home care was around the 3,600, when you were on. So, to see that those things are going up, it shows the urgency even more so for people to look at this as a serious thing to get involved with. So, But before we go, first off, is there anything I missed? Anything else you want to address or say?
I just really appreciate you inviting me on. And I said it earlier, but I really mean it. You're all going to get involved one way or the other, either the real estate, the business, or both. The question is how. And that's totally up to you. And Wayne Gretzky, the great one, the hockey player, when he was asked, how are you so good at what you do? He said, it's easy. I just go where the puck is going. And the puck is going in housing to the seniors. You're going to need this more and more and more. If you want to be set for life doing something that's going to be great for the next 20 or 30 years, senior housing is the way to do it. One way or the other, you're going to get involved.
And that's a great point. And like you said, you may be the resident and maybe, your family members, but either way, you're going to have some interaction there and have to make some key decisions. So, that's great. Well, Gene, thank you so much. I are you ready to close us out with your best old, Arizona hound dog howl, or maybe it's coyotes out there. I don't know.
Sure. You got it. You ready?
I'm ready.
How's that?
That was good. It's only got run over by a car at the end there. All right. Well, Gene, thank you so much again. Great information. I think it's a great resource for people to take a look at and consider. I just want to thank all of our old dog listeners out there for joining us today. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate that. Please note all the things we've discussed here are going to be in detail in our show notes at the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Gene Guarino. In there, there'll be a link to a free training so you can learn more in detail about what's involved and help you to consider whether or not that's something you might be interested in. So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.